Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Abbott.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we are doing a band that, we hope you're writing down the correct spelling of this band, because if you were to listen to this band just by the homonym, you might end up with the wrong band, or it might even end up with a TV show about a private eye. I don't know. The band we're talking about is, or I'm sorry, the artist we're talking about is Fish.
That's right.
And that is F-I-S-H, F-I-S-H, not P-I-P-H-I-S-H or G-O-G-H-O-T-I, any of those other weird spellings.
Yes.
It's F-I-S-H, just like nature intended us to spell Fish.
That's right. That's absolutely right. He got his start with a band, then broke off into a solo career, and there's going to be a lot of similarities to our bookends of this season.
Yeah, sure. This is almost like the bookend that sits in the middle of the bookcase between the books and doesn't really hold up any books.
just looks like a bookend.
Can't really call it a bookend, right? It's more like a book middle. If there is such a thing. And yeah, I like how cryptic you were about he was in a band. Like, you don't want to give that away until
not yet.
We get to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know how to play this game.
You do. Yes. The suspense, right? People are waiting on pins and needles to find out.
Oh, and hey, just before we jump into this, I just want to throw out the new Ghost album came out this last week.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm convinced that Ghost listens to our show because both of his covers are bands we've covered.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know Leonard Cohen is one of them. Who's the other one?
Pet Shop Boys. He covers It's a Sin.
Oh my gosh! See, here, and want to hear how embarrassed I am. I went to Target yesterday looking for speaker mounts, and I completely forgot to get the new Ghost album there because the one at Target is the one that has the bonus covers,
mm-hmm. and the lenticular cover.
It's got a lenticular cover.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right. I'm going there this afternoon. I got to go to the bank anyway. The bank is right by there. Speaking of lenticular covers, this is kind of a follow-up to one of our, look at the suspense we're leaving on Fish, by the way. But I do want to do a little follow-up. We talked about Tool episodes and episodes and episodes ago. And I had lunch with a listener last week who, after hearing us talk about Tool and about some of the special edition covers that they came out with, actually has some of them and brought them for me to see. So there is one that's a lenticular cover.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one that the glasses exactly, and it's the stereoscopic images,
mm-hmm.
some of which are amazing.
Yep.
And then the other one is like, oh yeah, it's a transparent booklet. And as you turn each page, it's almost like one of those medical diagrams that show, here's the skin, we take off the skin, and there's the muscle, and we take off the muscle, and here's the bone, and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I finally get to see those in person, and they're really, really cool.
They are cool.
It doesn't change my opinion of Tool, but it does make me realize that if I was in a band, that's what I would spend all my time doing. Like, hey, Brian, you mind working on playing some guitar for us? Oh, hold on, guys. I'm working on coming up with a really cool idea for our album cover. Okay, I'll be right with you. I'll be right there. Don't worry about it.
Well, it is. I mean, it does go to James Keenan or Maynard Keenan. He was a design and artist guy before he started getting into music. So it all makes sense.
Totally makes sense. Yeah, totally. Knowing that completely, I totally believe it.
Yep. Let's go fishing.
Let's jump back into the pool with the fish, or the lake, I guess it would be. Derek William Dick, better known as Fish, was born in Scotland.
He and I share a birthday, April 25th.
There you go. Happy birthday, Fish and Hammond, from a month and a half ago. if your name was Derek William Dick, I think you'd probably consider changing your name too.
Yes.
Yep, yeah. Yep. He's a singer, songwriter, and sporadic actor. He adopted the nickname of Fish during his time working as a gardener because he spent a lot of his time in the tub.
Yeah. Which is weird.
Didn't know that. Is weird.
It's a weird anecdote, and I'm not sure if it's true or not, but Wikipedia said it, so I put it in there because it was funny.
It's just weird that it would be during his time working as a gardener, because as a gardener, you don't work in a tub. So
No, because he was dirty, covered in dirt.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So he spent a lot of time in the tub washing the dirt off.
There you go.
That makes sense. Yeah. think they call me Prune. He's best known as the first lead singer of the prog band Marillion from the years 81 to 88. And as a solo artist, he's explored a number of different styles over the years. Classic Rock magazine ranked him as number 49 on the list of 100 greatest frontmen. That's huge for a guy that, I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of until you and I started talking about him and Marillion.
See, and I knew who he was. And
well,
you
would, because he's prog. He's like when you go to Sherwin Williams and you ask them for a can of prog, this is the color that they start with before they start adding any other colors to tint it in the particular shade you need. This is really, it feels like the definition of prog.
Yeah, and even more so after he left, Hogarth came in, yeah. And they I think if it's possible, they became even more proggy after 88.
Wow. Yeah, and I only listened to the Marillion stuff up until he left, so I can't even imagine the prog turned up to 11 with them. People are going to – I wonder what if people prefer our prog bias or our ska bias later on the show.
Next season, like, we have to ignore both of these genres just to make up for it.
We'll actually even say, like, this season of Soundography, 0% ska and prog.
Yep.
But, or skog.
But we will bring in a ton more death metal.
Oh, great. Terrific. As long as it's Scandinavian. Fish has been credited for playing a major role in Marillion's rise to fame in the 1980s, and he has cited Genesis, Pink Floyd, Moody Blues, Kinks, Bowie, and he's even cited Joni Mitchell as a major influence on his lyrical approach.
And oddly enough, and as weird as it sounds, I can pick out each of those. I can hear it.
I can hear... absolutely hear Pink Floyd. Now that you say it, I can hear Moody Blues. I did not pick up any Kinks or Bowie. And sure, I mean, the Genesis comparisons for me are absolutely in vocal style. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, too.
Yeah.
He's also known as Voracious Reader. And Marillion was originally named Cimmerillion after Tolkien's book, but was shortened early on.
Okay, and this leads me to a list.
Okay.
And this is a very long list, and maybe I'll send it to Brian. He can post it elsewhere on the Soundography site. But I found it on a website for the band Salem's Hill, which is another prog band.
Okay.
Oddly enough. And so I'm going to go through this, and Brian's going to react in real time.
Right. I've heard a couple of these, but I told him to save the rest of them.
And it's long, so to be honest with you...
Highlights.
Yeah. The highlights will be left in, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, cool.
The entire list will be made available on Patreon.
Oh, look at that. There you go. Nice.
Okay. The word mellotron causes a strange tingling in your private parts.
By the way, we need to say that... I don't know, you said it was a list, but you didn't say what the subject of the list is.
The title of the list is "You Might Be a Prog Hole If."
Okay, which I'd never heard the term "prog hole," but I immediately love it, and I can't wait to.
I think that might be what I get tattooed on myself.
I think it might be. Yeah, at least a license plate "prog hole." You got to see if that's available in Utah.
You love the albums Invisible Touch and 90125 and Love Beach, but are ashamed to admit it.
See, I'll cop to that one, except I don't know what Love Beach is, but I do like both 90125 and Invisible Touch, and I am afraid to. Well, I'm ashamed to admit I like Invisible Touch. Maybe not so much 90125. I feel like 90125 is a well-appreciated... You know what? I guess it would be embarrassing if I was a prog guy and said, oh, their earlier stuff is so much better. Mm-hmm. This is when they went pop. Okay, yeah. I get it. Yeah. I totally get it.
You believe the talent of a drummer is consummate to the size of his drum set, a la Mike Portnoy or the guy from Queensryche.
Or Neil Peart.
Yes, or Neil Peart. You consider lyrics to be wasted time between solos.
That might be my favorite one so far.
You go to King Crimson concerts and take notes.
Okay, I like that one. That's now my favorite.
You look down on any keyboardist who is not willing to haul around a real Hammond B3.
Okay.
The prefix labels of Canterbury, Melodic, Symphonic, and neo before the word prog simply mean sucky.
I didn't realize those were types of prog, but now I want to hear some Canterbury prog, man. Oh, geez. No, I don't. I don't want to hear some Canterbury prog.
You've named all the fish in your aquarium the names of past and present members of Yes.
Okay.
You've done time or community service for striking someone who said, "I love Yes, owner of the Lonely Heart Rocked."
I'd be the person that they struck.
Your one word code for time to leave a party is roundabout.
Okay.
All your favorite bands are named after characters or places from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Which goes back to the Silmarillion.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Okay. Are you 99 out of 100 so far on this list? Or?
There are a few that I'm not, but okay. I'm pretty prog holy.
You'd roll your eyes though if you said, if, you know, I said, "Oh, I love Yes. Owner of Lonely Heart is such a great song." You wouldn't strike me, but you'd roll your eyes.
No, because I love it too. That's the thing. This is why I kind of straddle the line, because
gotcha.
I know what all this is, but I also can cop to a lot of it too.
Gotcha. Okay.
You spend more time and energy on tuning or turning your woman onto prog than actually turning on your woman.
I like that. Okay.
You've actually danced to Tom Sawyer. You think Yes's Union album should have been titled Onion instead because it stank.
That's another album I like.
You know the lyrics to any Gentle Giant song, which, by the way, I do think we need to cover Gentle Giant sometime in the distant future.
Yeah, I was going to say, not next season, apparently.
No. You have ever betted on the runtime of Change of Seasons and or Grendel. One's Dream Theater and the other is... We're covering today.
Okay, good. We needed a Dream Theater reference in here. Or has there been more that I just haven't picked up
on? No, so, well, the drummer one so far, and there are going to be a couple others coming up.
Okay.
Because I contributed to this list and they're still active online.
Okay.
You get teary-eyed when your children sing along with any of your old prog records. I have to say that I've come close to that happening.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah.
You measure the value of a song by the number of time signature changes in it. You bought two copies. Oh, here's where I start. You bought two copies of the special edition of The Bridge Across Forever, one to keep sealed, the other to burn copies of for your car, your office, and your wife's car, just in case. Then they both were put carefully away.
Did you do that?
Yes.
I love it. Okay, good.
Even though you do not listen to Christian rock, you own all of Neil Morse's solo albums. You created a top 10 list of concept albums.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't surprise me.
You consider anyone who adds to this list anti-prog and tell them to go listen to Mushroomhead. You pushed for Rush's Time Stand Still to be your senior class song in high school, which I did. Yes.
Oh, that's so awesome.
You had June or Surrounded played at your wedding. You can name every musician that ever played for Yes and which albums they played on, but have trouble remembering your kids' birthdays.
That's awesome. That's totally awesome. Full list if you're a patron, and then links, links to the list also on the website. Very good. Let's see here. In 1980, back to our show. In 1981, Fish joined Marillion. They grew in popularity over the next few years, which led up to the release of the first album, 1983's Script for a Jester's Tear.
So shall we talk about vocal stuff real quick?
Let's talk about vocal stuff because it's going to come up immediately as soon as people hear how Fish sounds.
Yes. So I sent you a text and said he sounds a lot like Phil Collins. But then as I got further into it, I realized he sounds an awful lot like Peter Gabriel. Right. But then later, I sent you one and said, I think I've nailed it. When he slows down and actually sings slower, more emotive songs, he's Peter Gabriel. When he picks up and sings faster, kind of more rockin' tunes, he's Phil Collins. So let's call him Peter Collins.
Peter Collins, yes. Famed game show host Peter Collins. No, that's totally true. Like that was the first thing I noticed, because the first album that I listened to was Songs from Mirror. You were nice enough to send me a copy of that, and because it's an all cover album. And one of the first things I noticed is like, wow, his voice is a lot like Peter, or a lot like Phil Collins. And it wasn't until I started getting into some of the more deeper tracks on his other solo albums. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I hear the Peter Gabriel comparison as well, for sure.
So yeah, it's going to be a very familiar sounding voice, especially for people who've listened to season or the first episode of the season and in a few weeks when we do the last episode of the season. So this really, mm-hmm. we were joking about being kind of a middle book of it. Mm-hmm. He cited them as inspirations, and there's some sound that's very similar as well.
No doubt at all. No doubt. All right. So 1983, Script for a Jester's Tear. This was a Marillion album, part one of an intended trilogy. Charted well in the UK and produced two top 40 singles, He Knows and Garden Party.
So this actually kind of re-sparked life into progressive music. I guess it had been waning with the album-oriented rock and radio shifting to more ads and kind of the way people consumed music in the cars and when they're on the mm-hmm. roads and traveling. So sure. This actually brought prog back to the main front because they had obscene popularity almost right from the get-go. And also there's a song on there called Chelsea Monday, and I had to make the joke that there's just another Chelsea Monday.
Nice, very nice. This album reached number 7 on the album charts, followed by the next year's release, Fugazi, in 1984. Featured brand new drummer, and it was a more straight ahead album. It built on the first album's success, reaching number 5, and two singles released from this, Punch and Judy and Assassin. That's right, it was Assassin.
It was Assassin.
Were the first two singles released. How many albums did Marillion have before Phish joined?
It was their initial album.
It was, okay. Mm-hmm. So they were, he was part of the debut.
Yep.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. 1985 saw the release of Misplaced Childhood, produced a major hit, Kaylee. We'll talk about that later. They were able to express thoughts on alcoholism and drug abuse next to rock ballads and Rebirth and Redemption. Album.
So I have to tell you that if I had a list of top 20 albums, mm-hmm. Phish actually holds two places on that. This one with Misplaced Childhood, mm-hmm. and then later when we get to another one. But if I had a list of top 20 albums, Phish holds two places on that list.
Wow. Who doesn't have a list of their favorite albums? I totally have a list of my favorite albums. It's in my head, but I should write it down somewhere. Well, you weren't alone. Kerrang! Magazine called it the album of the year. They actually were offered the Highlander soundtrack, but they turned it down because of their world tour, and they regretted missing the chance. And those of us who are Queen fans are okay with that.
So could you hear Marillion doing, let's just say this is song for song, that the songs were already written for the movie.
Sure.
Could
who
you
wants
hear
to live forever?
Uh-huh.
Without a doubt. Yeah, I could totally hear that. And Give Me the Prize. I don't know. I mean, totally could hear Who Wants to Live Forever because it's one of Queen's slower ballads, and it's, aside from the Brian May guitar solo, it could easily be a Marillion song. But you go into stuff like Give Me the Prize.
What's that? Princes of the Universe? Is that the other one?
Yeah, Princes of the Universe.
That one's very tied up in Freddie Mercury's voice for me.
100%. Both of those are for me. Give Me the Prize as well. And it's that, like that. Mm-hmm. Again, it's Brian May's guitar almost that locks it in as a Queen song for me. I wonder if those songs, I assume those songs were written by May and Mercury.
Yeah, I would assume so because they're on their greatest hits. It's not like it's on exclusively Highlander music. It's
Right.
Very Queen-centric, like Flash Gordon is.
Yep, exactly. So so Merlion would have had to just like come up with their own their own songs, like their own writing for that. That would have been interesting. 1987 saw the album Clutching at Straws. This one a little bit darker, a little bit more introspective. Fish announced at this point that he was leaving the band.
Yeah, he actually said to them with the ultimatum, either you get rid of your manager or you get rid of me. And he left.
They kept their manager. Interesting. So it's just like a creative differences kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, interesting. All right. Three singles came from this album. Incommunicado, which I liked. Sugar and Mice and Warm Wet Circles, which I really liked. And we'll talk about that later as well.
I'm probably going to cut this joke out, but sometimes you have to sleep in the warm, wet circle.
Yeah, I know. I still don't know what that song's about.
I know.
I don't know if I want to know. I don't know if I want to have it explained. In 1990, and you can leave all that in, 1990, we saw Vigil in a Wilderness of Mirrors. This was the debut solo album by Fish. The release was delayed as not to compete with Marillion's new release, which was Season's End. And this was his most successful solo album. State of Mind, Big Wedge. I just cleared immigration, J.A.K. A priest got in a Cadillac. The shoeshine boys sang gospel as God and his accountant strode away. And Gentlemen's Excuse, or I'm sorry, Gentlemen's Excuse Me, were all charting singles.
So the album cover of this is awesome. It's very post-apocalyptic for the time, and it has lots and lots of references in there, including an Amiga 500 in the pile of junk on the album cover.
Wow. Just to show you, cutting-edge technology in a post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
The Amiga 500.
Did you own an Amiga?
Never had an Amiga. I had the TRS-80 color computer, and from there I went straight to my first Mac, which was a 2CX.
See, I went from an Amiga, I think it might have been a 500, to one of those Apple Power PCs.
Yeah, the Power Max. Power computing ones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I used to play Myst on that.
Oh, Myst, man. Did you know, this is totally side related, but the guys, Rand the other guy, Miller, they're both Rand and Roger, not Roger Miller. Anyway, they just kickstarted the re-release of Myst, like a new remastered version. But one of the things that they were adding on to it was a little Arduino computer and a screen in what looks like a book that looks like a little linking book right from the game.
Yeah, I actually saw that because I interviewed Russell Brower, and he'd mentioned his involvement in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then I interviewed a guy named Philip Shane, who's actually doing a documentary about the game Myst.
Oh, that's cool. I can't wait to see that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll have to listen to your documentary, your interview first. This prep. Very good. Let's see here. In 1991, they released Internal Exile. It was subtitled A Collection of a Boy's Own Stories. And if that isn't proggy as hell, I don't know what is.
So I actually really enjoyed this album a lot more than I thought I would. Cause I hadn't listened to this one in years, and I went into it kind of remembering, oh, it's one of his lesser ones. It's one of the ones I kind of blew over when I started listening to Fish. But I came back to it and really, really enjoyed it.
Cool. Yeah, that was all right. It was inspired by Fish's past and personal problems, and it shows his influence from Celtic and folk music.
Yeah, Credo, Tongues, and Internal Exile became staples of his live show.
Sense. All right, here's where my ears get perked up. 1993, Songs from the Mirror. He follows tradition and releases a cover album. This album reached number 46 on the UK album chart. And it reflects his taste in music when he was an adolescent.
And so Hold Your Head Up was actually released as a single, which is, of all the ones on there, I guess it's the one that was most radio ready and kind of acceptable. But there are lots of others on there I liked.
Me too. And here's a little spoiler. If I could have put the whole album as one of my items in my playlist, I would have. But we'll talk about which one I picked, because I didn't read this before I picked my list.
Well, and I feel the same way about an album coming up, that I wish I could have just stick the whole thing on there. But yeah. Yeah.
1994, the album Suits was released. This was the first album on his own label.
And I really think that it was probably Meghan Markle's favorite album. You know, her involvement in the TV show, Suits.
Oh, and Suits. See, I only know her from being married to the Prince.
Yeah,
I only know her from that. Mm-hmm. I never...
she was in a show called Suits.
Was that a UK show?
No, it was a USA show.
But it was adapted from a UK show, right? Or no, I'm thinking of... That's funny. I'm thinking of a show called Skins.
Yes. Yep.
That's hilarious. Okay. Yep. Which she was not involved
no.
in. even without a lot of major support, the album Suits went to number 18 on the UK charts. Two singles came from this, Lady Let Lie and Fortunes of War. I kind of like that song too, Lady Let Lie. Lady Let It Lie or something like that.
Yeah.
It was weird. Tina and I were listening to it, and we're both perplexed by the title, as we were with Warm Wet Circles. in an attempt to keep up sales for Fortunes of War over a longer period, Fish had decided to release four versions of the CD single across 4 weeks. As an incentive, every individual single CD contained a different version of the title track and three different acoustic recordings each, adding up to a full acoustic album in terms of playing time. However, record shops frustrated the scheme by often selling the complete four-disc set at one time.
Yeah, I gotta understand why they do that, but at the same time, being one of those guys who was waiting for it to be released on the... If you were a fan, that'd be kind of cool.
It would be kind of cool, although it'd be frustrating. It's like, we'll just sell it as an album. Like, you're going to charge me $6.99 each for these singles, so I'm going to end up paying $28 for what you probably could have sold to me for $12.
Yeah.
Dang it! 1997 saw the release of Sunsets on an Empire. A lot of this album was written with Steve Wilson of Porcupine Tree.
So when we were in Vegas, I got into a conversation with Angela about old Steve Wilson, and she thinks we need to cover him sometime. And based on what we've said earlier, she's going to have to pony up, because I don't think it's going to happen until someone does.
Right. Yeah.
We've hit the Prague quota for the next couple little while.
We totally have. It's like, come on, people, more than just prog holes listen to this show, right?
Unless we want to swing that direction.
No! sound prography. I could just see it now. The album and tour totally flopped, and Fish was out tons of money, which led him to shutting down his record label. And in 1998, Kettle of Fish, which was a best of album, was released.
So the next album is going to be... The placeholder for one of the other favorite albums of all time that I have. I freaking love this album from front to back. It's got a giant epic on there. I mean, it's everything I love in an album.
Wow. Okay. Well, that album is Rain Gods with Zippos, which came out in 1999. And it's usually listed as one of, if not the best, of his solo albums.
Steve Wilson played a lot of guitar on this album. There's a song on there called Rites of Passage, which could so easily be a Peter Gabriel tune.
From his love for gods and war, I left my love in a grave and I mocked it.
Huh, y'all need to re-listen to that one. But there's a 6-part epic on here just because it's part of the quota, the prog quota, called Plague of Ghosts.
It's one of those, there's a checklist.
I know. And, yeah, if your album contains part one, like a lot of songs that end with part one, part two, or slashes in between title, like in the middle of a title, you've got eight songs all jammed into one and it's 12 minutes long.
Or you've got colons in your titles.
Right, exactly. Slashes and colons. There's got to be an equivalent to the prog hole list for, you know, if you're a pretentious prog artist.
Yeah.
Although I don't want to call anyone pretentious.
No, there's a certain level of pretension, and I think even some prog people see that.
Sure. You're never going to get radio play if you keep making your songs 12 minutes long, man.
But who needs radio play? Because that just means you're a sellout.
Right, exactly. Coming back from that list. In 2001, he released Fellini Days, started a new label at this point called Chocolate Frog Records.
He has to have been a Harry Potter fan, right?
I would think so. I mean, it's how far is it down from the Tolkien books at the Barnes & Noble from Lord of the Rings to Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone? Well, I guess in the UK it'd be Philosopher's Stone.
Well, and also if you get to a certain... You get to a certain point, you've read all the Tolkien stuff, so you have to move to something else, and Potter is the next step in your fantasy evolution, if you have kids especially.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, do we need to worry if he starts getting into, like, a Divergent or the Maze Runner? I mean, are those going to be future album influences?
The Shadowhunters.
What's that?
The Shadow Hunters.
Right, exactly. There was a bonus companion disc that contained alternate mixes and live shows for Fellini Days. In 2004, he released Field of Crows. I don't know why I put Songs from the Mirror in here.
Because, no, because it was remastered.
Oh, that was the date, the 2003. Okay.
Yeah, that was a new remastered release.
That's why my thing said 2003, and I... Totally thought that it didn't get added to the playlist or the show notes. I'm like, oh, I'm adding this one. In 2004, he released Field of Crows.
So on the album cover, and you have to look at this on the internet or pictures, because the cover, he looks like Morpheus.
Oh, he walking, totally does. Yeah.
Or maybe all even the crow.
Sometimes he comes back. But he's like in a field of corn or wheat or something.
Dressed like Morpheus.
Totally dressed like Morpheus, the black trench coat, the glasses. Yep. Very Van Gogh style cover, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
I think. Kind of cool. In 2007, he released 13th Star. This album featured a more guitar-centric sound. And this one really struck a note with me, no pun intended, but I really, really liked 13th Star. And it felt like, tell me, is this a concept album? Because it feels like a concept album.
I didn't see anything saying it was, but really, if it's a prog album, there the chances of being a concept album are like, you know, 7 out of 10.
Right, exactly. It may even be like an unintended concept album. Oh, I guess it was in hindsight. Yes, yeah. A concept mm-hmm. album. It was seen as a departure, though, from his normal style by some. I don't know if that correlates to me really liking it. Many of the songs deal with a failed relationship that ended in a canceled wedding, really by him.
I think it was by her, according to what
it was a wedding that he was going to be
in
yes,
and canceled. Okay. It got canceled.
Wow. This was his 13th studio album, counting the four that he did with Marillion, lending its name to the title, most likely. And in 2013, he released A Feast of Consequences.
Which, that one, I'll be honest with you, did not hit anything really outstanding with me.
No, and it was one that I accidentally listened to out of order. I listened to Feast of Consequences before 13th Star, and 13th Star still felt like it jumped out. And for some reason, it felt like that was the newest album. And that's why I was surprised that, I listened to him out of order.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Let's get to statistics and general notes.
So the script for Jester's Tear and Fugazi were both certified gold. Jester's Tear was certified platinum. Fugazi was certified gold. On a side note, going back to Genesis a little bit, Fish collaborated with Tony Banks on a couple of his projects. He sang on Shortcut to Somewhere, Angel Face, and Another Murder of a Day. I'm pretty sure that Tony was probably accustomed to working with this type of voice because he's worked with Peter and Phil.
Mm-hmm. Sure, would make sense.
In 2008, he sang with Tony. He along with Tony Iommi, Ian Anderson, and Gary Moore, bought the digital radio station Planet Rock, saving it from closure.
Hmm. I'm not familiar with that. So is that an online?
I think it's an online, basically rock prog radio station.
Wow. Okay.
And then Fish has a number of bit to minor roles on various TV shows and movies and things like that. A lot of them British shows that I'd never seen, but nothing that was like, ooh, I've seen that. I need to go back and look for him.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Do you know which shows?
His IMDb profile says vocalist, poet. Fish joined the neo-progressive rock band Marillion in 81 and led the band through numerous successes before departing for a solo career. A dynamic personal presence of both off and on stage, Fish branched out into acting. He showed up in, most recently, Car Share from 2017.
Car Share, okay.
Oh, that was soundtrack. Sorry, that was a soundtrack. As actor, as actor, he showed up in Electric Man in 2012 as Uncle Jimmy.
Oh, sure. Who could forget Uncle Jimmy in Electric Man?
He was in The Jacket, Quite Ugly Morning, Nine Gay Guys as Old Nick.
Yeah, Old Nick, yeah. Classic character.
He was Taggart. He was in the TV show Taggart as Dougie Todd.
Okay.
The Young Person's Guide to Becoming a Rock Star. He was Derek Trout.
Yeah. That's kind of funny,
actually. That is funny, yeah. Then he was on the TV show The Bill as David Lawson. And then Chasing the Door, he was Angus Cameron.
These must all be like UK,
yeah, that's
really right. Popular shows in the UK, because I've never heard of a single one of these.
Yeah, and then also there was one in 91 he did called Zorro. It was a TV show, and he played Daniel Nelson.
Okay.
So
yeah, this is not quite paralleling the Phil Collins appearing on Miami Vice trajectory. Maybe vocally, but not. They don't have the same agent, apparently.
Yes, I mean his music showed up. Kay Lee shows up all kinds of places.
Of course,
as far as soundtrack goes.
Yeah,
it was in Skins. That's weird.
Oh, really? Very show that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, in 2009, they used Kay Lee in Skins.
Nice. There you go. Again, a show unrelated to Meghan Markle. Can we make that clear to avoid any cease and desist? Yeah. Well, speaking of that popular song that you just named, let's talk about Stairway to Heaven song. So let's see, you go see Fish in concert.
Which again, he's still doing. He's still touring.
Yes. And if it's under 3 hours, then you're at the right Fish concert.
Well, actually, the PH Fish, they're a jam band. So they might
That's
go longer.
Saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. If they're under 3 hours.
Under 3 hours, then you're at the right Fish concert.
Yes. Okay. Wow. The long jokes get weird when you start doing jam band stuff in prog stuff. It gets
right?
Awkward.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's like even jam bands are kind of chuckling at, oh, that prog band is doing a 7-minute song. How quaint.
Hold my beer.
Exactly. Right. All right.
So the songs that I think we would hear most would be Lavender, Lucky, Internal Exile, The Company, and I think the winner, hands down, is Kay Lee. Because Kay Lee shows up on albums like Blue Monday showed up on albums.
Right, right. It makes sense. I mean, it's easily their biggest hit, and it seems like he would do that as part of every show. So believe it or not, it's second in the list. So now see, here's what's tough with a band called Fish. I mean, it really is. I'm thinking I'm on a Fish page, but he's because it's spelled the right way.
I wonder if his fans are called groupers instead of groupies.
That's really good. If not, they should be. Because it looks like, all right, 1988, he did one show. This would make sense because then, you know, before that, you'd have Marillion. So I believe I'm on the right thing. But man, he has done, the dude tours like crazy. 1997, he did 117 shows. And most of these other years are like between 50 and 80. So good on him, man. Yeah. Holy cow. The number one song, though, The Company. Your insincere platitudes make me throw up. The sooner you realize I'm perfectly happy if I'm left to decide the company I choose.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even familiar with that song.
I mean, it made my list, but
oh, it did right there. Yeah, it's in your potential list. Now, Kaylee and Lavender tied for second place.
Okay.
And then Vigil, which I believe is the Vigil for the... I guess the song was called Vigil. The album was called Vigil in Wilderness of Mirrors. Lucky, Heart of Lothian, which was a Merlion song. Cliche, Family Business, Perception of Johnny Punter. Slanche Math, which is another... a Merlion song. Let's see, what's the first non-Merlion cover he does? Oh, man. Oh, it's all the way down, 52, Faith Healer by the sensational Alex Harvey Band. Wow.
Oh, that's funny. Faith Healer is actually on Rain Gods with Zippos. I had no idea that was a cover.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that either. Look at that, Faith Healer, track 5. Huh. And nothing mentioned from Songs from the Mirror. Let's see. Merlion. Boston Tea Party. Jeepster by T-Rex.
I don't know that one. Do you?
I do. Yeah. It's got a great guitar. Like goes dun, 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 dun. It's a great song. And again, it's a great song for people who think that T-Rex only did Bang a Gong, Get It On, and then disappeared. and then Hold Your Head Up. Wow, all the way down at 85. You'd think he'd do that more in concert than he does. Very interesting. I love these. Sometimes these statistics, man, come up with some really interesting.
So based on the things we've learned, and we can cut this part out, but based on the things we've learned, do you want to change Hold Your Head Up?
No, I do not.
Okay,
I'm keeping it,
okay,
man.
All right.
Yeah, because I want to talk about why it makes such a great song.
Okay, all right.
All right, now let's talk about, speaking of covers, talking about that Hold Your Head Up, who would we like to hear them cover? Who would we like to hear Fish cover? Someone he hasn't covered yet, and I'm going to start with mine, because I really like the way that he can take songs that are from the 70s. He does Question by the Moody Blues. He does Ape Man by the Kinks on that Songs from the Mirror. Time and a Word, The Seeker by The Who. I want to see him tackle Jefferson Starship's Miracles. Now, not to be confused with Just Starship, Hammond.
Come on.
Note about We Built This City. Although, you know what? I think he'd rock that one too. But no, what's really cool about Miracles is it's a very simple, not a lot of musical arrangement, not a lot of instruments, subdued kind of track. And I think he could actually really like make it bombastic, you know, turn it on its ear, especially with a lot of additional instrumentation, a lot of prog instrumentation, I think would be really cool.
Or he could strip it down and do the Peter Gabriel style of it too.
He could. He totally could. Yeah.
I went in a very, very different direction. I went for Outshined by Soundgarden. I think that when he does his hard rockin' growly voice thing, he's got Steve Wilson cracking on guitar and he's really pounding things stuff out. I think he'd really, really do an interesting version of this because it's such an aggressive song. And I think he could actually either change where the aggression's coming from or strip it down to be something more heartfelt. But either way, I think he could really kill it.
That's great. That is a really, really good suggestion, because I think looking at this, I mean, even that album, Songs from the Mirror, I don't think there's anything newer than like mid-80s.
Well, that reflected his listening taste from like his ages from like 12 to 18 or something. That was very specific to what he listened to in his formative years.
Influences. Yeah, makes sense. All right, cool. Great suggestion. It would be cool to hear him actually do something newer as a cover. All right, well, let's get to our playlist. First one is a Merlion track from me. I mentioned it earlier, Warm Wet Circles. This is from Clutching at Straws. Look, I don't know. I still don't know what the song is about, and I probably should look at the lyrics. But damn it, if it's not catchy enough to start singing along with it. I absolutely hear some Pink Floyd influence in this song. Maybe even some influence of the song Fearless by Pink Floyd, which is one he did cover later on. This is it's just, there's nowhere that the Pink Floyd influence is more evident for me than this song right here. Next one is from 13th Star, the second to most recent album, which I loved. Square Go.
No photos of a family in my wallet. Got no ID. No credit cards. I don't exist.
Which also reminds me, I talked about this a little bit, or the Peter Gabriel connection. This is the one that sounds a lot to me like Digging in the Dirt, reference-wise.
Oh my gosh, you know what? Now that you've said it and I'm thinking about it, you are so right. I mean, it's almost, you can almost sing along with it.
Totally. Yeah, you could almost sing the Digging in the Dirt lyrics, but it's still its own thing. I mean, there's a whole different instrumentation part in the middle of it that's very different from Digging in the Dirt, so no way am I saying that this is what a rip-off or anything like that. Really good. Number three for me is Numbers, which comes from Field of Crows.
Six shells slid snugly deep inside the oily chambers. 7 hours until the pickup in the dawn. 800 clicks of open road before the border. Man lies up, he knew the clock was.
They should have used this as the theme song to the television show Numbers, but I never watched Numbers, so maybe they did. I don't know. But if they didn't, they should have. Although I don't know what they used, so maybe it was better. But
anyway. It just doesn't add up.
Ah, very good. But anyway, I like this song and felt like it should have been used somewhere. Next one is from the Fellini Days album. It's called The Pilgrim's Address. And this reminds me of the Simon and Garfunkel song 7 o'clock News, where as they're singing, the news is playing in the background. Now, in this song, in The Pilgrim's Address, the stuff you're hearing in the background, which has got this kind of spoken word, almost like you're listening to... I actually had to pause the song because I thought I had like an open tab in my browser.
We now kill our own, and we waste away like shadows in our homes. I fell from blue skies, fought through desert storms.
That was playing something, and then I realized, no, these are actual, he's saying the lyrics of the song as he's singing them, and it's really, really cool. Also kind of reminds me a little bit of Nobody Home by Pink Floyd, so a little bit of an influence there as well. And then a song I've brought up a couple times on this show, Argent's Hold Your Head Up, which it comes from that song, is from the mirror. Look, I like that whole album. Question by the Moody Blues. His cover of that is really good. I Know What I Like by Genesis. Ape Man by the Kinks. A lot of great stuff on there. But Hold Your Head Up, when you think of the original song and it starts with that. Oh, no, it starts with the bass line. And then the other guitar comes in. His version doesn't do that. And it made me realize that I would, if I was a producer for a band and they were saying, oh, yeah, we really want to cover Hold Your Head Up by Argent, I probably would have said, oh, yeah, we should do, we should start it off with that bass line, that iconic bass line from that song. And he proves that you don't have to do that. Like, you can boil a song down to its very essence and then rebuild it into a really, really good cover. And I love the fact that he did that. So, okay, so it's a single. And okay, so it's one he plays pretty often in concert, but whatever, still really like it. And it belongs in my list.
So before we jump into mine, I want to ask you something. You listened to a lot of this while you were riding your bike.
No, I couldn't. Well, some of it I did. But I ended up re-listening to that stuff here in the studio or in the car, because those are my favorite two places to listen to music. And I feel like, unless it's a band I know really well, like our band next week, I feel like I feel like I can't give it its fair shake unless I'm listening to it in the car or in the studio here.
I'm kind of the same way. I just was wondering how it affected your the way you worked and the way your mentality with it. But since you didn't really, yeah. I won't worry about it. Yeah. I will say though that I like to listen to music in the car and in the house. Mm-hmm. I also listen to music a lot when I'm mowing the lawn, but it has to be stuff I'm familiar with, which usually lends me to look like an idiot while I'm mowing the lawn, because I'm usually gesticulating and talking to myself as I'm mowing the lawn, and the neighbors look at me like I'm sort of a crazy person.
And mowing the lawn takes 45 minutes because you got to listen to one Dream Theater song.
And by the way, that was your mention of it, not mine.
I know. It was. Take a drink, everybody.
Yeah, so that's
totally cool.
My first one is Grendel from Script from a Jester's Tear. This was on the 2-disc remaster of it. It's almost 20 minutes of perfect prog storytelling. And I like Grendel as the story. I remember I read that when I was, my mom read it to me when I was super young. And then I read it again a couple times when I was in college, because I'm that kind of guy. So when I heard the song for it, I totally jumped in. I totally liked it because it was proggy and awesome. And also it was dealing with topics that I knew from literature, which made me feel smarter. Mm-hmm. And I needed that. Cool.
Yep.
Then I put Shadow Play from Exile. I never realized just how far we'd gone. I turned around and all that I saw was distance to an angle burned every time that someone mentioned your name. This one is just so theatrical sounding and just so majestic, and it feels like I listened to that one here in the office, and it really filled the office, and it wrapped around me, and it felt like I was wearing headphones, even though I wasn't, and I was in the song. It was great. And then I picked Faith Healer from Rain Gods with Zippos. Now, I would pick all of Rain Gods with Zippos if I had choices.
Right, kind of like how I feel with songs from the mirror.
Yeah, yes. But I also know that Brian and I have instituted these rules that are tenuous at best. So I only stuck with one song. Just go out walking in the rain. You watch the flowers go to bed. Ask the man inside your head. Your spirit never has to grieve. All you got to do is believe. And it's Faith Healer from Rain Gods with Zippos. This has all of the hallmarks of songs that I love. It's got the guitars, it's got building up, it's aggressive, it's got changes in tempo, and it's got changes in mood, and it's got all the things. I mean, if you went through what Hammond likes in music, this hits all the boxes. Mm-hmm. So Rain Gods with Zippos, Faith Healer. Open Water from 13th Star. Got no sense of direction, the speaking at the start of it is so cool, and it's got such a cool rhythm underneath the verse, and the change up in the chorus is also really, really unexpected. And I just, the twists and turns the song took really, really surprised me. And I thought I knew what Fish was up to, and then the song comes along and kind of shakes all that up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And then the last one I picked was The Perception of Johnny Punter, which is super grungy, but it's still very much Fish. Said you'd never get caught out. You said a little habit. So now you're Mr. Fix-It. Just another illusion. This is the song that kind of led me back to what I thought he should cover in Outshined.
Right, in the Soundgarden song. Yeah, it makes sense. Wow, that's cool.
So those are my five. But really, I could have all of Rain Gods, and we could actually have that be Songs from Mirror and Rain Gods, and we don't have to say anything else.
Right. Yeah. So if you're looking for some of those albums to choose from, if you like covers, or if you like Hold Your Head Up as an example, then go check out Songs from Mirror. And if you like some of the stuff you heard from Rain Gods with Zippos, it's funny that I didn't pick anything from that album, even though I really did like that album. I liked it more than the Feast of Consequences.
Yeah. Mission Statement's sure. Really good. There are lots of great songs on that album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Very cool. Well, it seems like a good place to put a pin in that fish. We've gutted it. We've cleaned it. I don't know.
We picked the bones clean.
Because it's just getting, what's that?
We picked the bones clean.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
We've scaled it.
Okay. Now you've gone too far. Our next episode is a sponsored episode. Big thanks to our patron, Joe Acosta. Weezer was his first choice from earlier seasons, and this time he's having us cover a band that I am so excited about because I've been a fan of theirs ever since 1980. There's a sticker on the back of my car. I only have two stickers on the back of my car. One is the Shield logo from Marvel, and the other one is the logo for Oingo Boingo, and I'm super excited that we're going to be tackling those guys for our next episode. Big thanks to Joe.
The only thing I know about Oingo Boingo is their greatest hits album. So cool. this will be really fun for me.
Yeah. Try not to be put off by the very first song on the very first album, which is written from the perspective of a pedophile.
Great.
Try not to let that.
Well, Aqua Lung does the same thing. So.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. See. All right. Cool.
Look at me tying everything back to Prague.
And you don't think Ian Anderson is a pedophile, right?
No, but he does use more keys than Elfman does.
He does. Okay. Very good. So stay tuned. Oingo Boingo going to be our very next episode. Between now and then, reach out to us via email. You certainly can do that using the email address. Well, the only way you can do that is to use the email address soundographypodcast@gmail.com. If email is not your bag, baby, you can use Twitter @TheSoundography is where you can find us there. If you just like looking at pretty pictures on the web, we got that covered too. Soundography.com has every show we've ever done. And all 63 of them, including this one. And every episode has extensive materials in the show notes. It may not be a lot of text in there. Sorry, Yoast. But you'll find a playlist, the aforementioned Spotify playlist. You'll find links to Amazon to buy albums. I'm going to make it Rain Gods with Zippos for this one, of course. And you'll find a link to support us on Patreon. If you want to just say, hey, I dig what you do. Here's $1 a month or $2 a month or whatever. We appreciate that. We love it. And we appreciate all of our patrons. You guys are all awesome. Thank you for supporting the show. And
we couldn't do this without patrons.
We really couldn't. And we certainly couldn't do Oingo Boingo without patrons. There you go. If you want to leave us a review, you can do that anywhere you like, whether it's iTunes or on our website or Stitcher, anywhere you want to do it. We love hearing what you guys have to say about the show. And, of course, we love just getting notes from you telling us what you think. That's going to do it.
I was just going to remind everyone, the patrons will get the full reading of the Prog Hole list. And and we'll somehow make the list available somewhere so people can see it and read it amongst their friends.
As a link. Yeah, we'll put the link. We'll put a text link in the show notes. But if you want to hear Hammond reading it and my reactions to it and our discussions about it, then that'll be available for you patrons. So see, you get bonus stuff like that. All right. That's going to do it for this edition. We'll be back next week. So stick around for that. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.